You've tuned in to Misbehaving, a podcast where we get up close and personal with today's most imaginative authors. Every episode, we'll be sitting down with a new writer to discuss their magical worlds, futuristic visions, and how they bring their wildest ideas to the page. Navigating through the cosmic expanse with me today is the fantastic Jen Nixon. Jen, how has the last 2 months treated you in the realms of the extraordinary?
Pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing all right. It was a rough 2 months for me, but I'm back in the seat, right?
Doing better. That's what I like to hear.
I like to hear it too, let me tell you.
Everybody needs a winter break, you know, so it's okay to take a chill and, you know, take care of yourself for a little while. Everybody
right. Just breathe in the cold air and
I don't mind. I like the cold air.
I'm with you. And we've been having rain. Remember my passion for rain. And
yes.
We've been having rain. And it rained a little today. We're supposed to get rain this week. I love it so much.
Very good. That's great. So who do we have on the podcast this week?
Oh, I'm so excited. Today we have the most excellent Matthew C. Matt Lucas. Matt was born and raised in Tampa, Florida, and lives there now with his wife, their two sons, dog, and oh my gosh, really? You have an axolotl? Speculative fiction that ranges from dark and epic to droll and historic to a lot of stuff in between. His published novels include The Mountain, and Yonder and Far, The Lost Lock, and most recently, Look With Your Eyes, about a secret society of squirrel conspiratorialists. Matt Lucas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Welcome.
Thank you all. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
You know, I had to stop myself earlier when we were doing pre-show stuff, because I will not stop gushing about you, Matt. I loved Yonder and Far. I usually like everything I edit, but your stuff, I just drank it in. I just loved it so much.
Thank you so much, Rob. It was a pleasure working with you on that one. And I'm looking forward to working with you on another one, hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon. Yeah, that's a little teaser for everyone. If you love Matt Lucas, he's working on another Yonder and Far, right? I can say Yonder and Far, right? So it's going to be another Yonder and Far. And I did read a little bit of that, and I had to stop myself because we were just checking to see if we wanted to bring it on. And I'm like, I'm just going to read the whole thing. So I had to stop myself and get back to you and say, yes, of course, we will take you.
I am thrilled to be working with you all again on that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing. So tell us a little bit about that book, Yonder and Far.
So the idea of it was really inspired, and I'll give credit where credit is due, to Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Which I loved. I've read that book through probably three times, including the footnotes, which I love too. It's a great story, a great novel. But I thought, wouldn't it be neat if you took that premise, that idea, historical fantasy, but instead of focusing on the people, what if you centered it around the fae? Who are trying to fit in our world. And then what if you maybe threw in a little bit of, you know, something like a Casablanca kind of element where there, you know, there's a couple of them that are stuck here. And then what if you put it, instead of in England, which a lot of this stuff gets set in, what if you put it in post-colonial United States? And that's where Yonder and Far came from, kind of an odd couple of fae that are, they find themselves stuck in our world in very early 1800s, late 1700s, Boston, trying to get home, but kind of haphazardly making their way in our world.
Love it. Love a good mashup.
And it's just delicious. The characters are just lovely, and the world building, again, I will just gush and gush. I could do a whole show just gushing on this book. I just loved it so much. But I want to hear about Look With Your Eyes.
So Look With Your Eyes was a something that Elysian Press was very kind to put into the queue, because it's very different from what the kind of stuff that I've written with you all in the past and what I typically write. Even it's contemporary, set in Florida, and it is set around the idea. You all should just brace yourselves. Your listeners should get ready for this, because you may not believe it, but we are surrounded by enemies, and those enemies are in the treetops, and they are the squirrels.
Yep.
They look cute. You think they're harmless, but that's just a ruse. That's one they're pulling over on all of us.
And they're everywhere.
They are everywhere. and they're watching everything we do. Fortunately for us all, there is a secret society. You would call them conspiratorialists, Rob. I would call them truth seekers.
Exactly, right. I just used your word, but really my word. these are the people who know, right? It's wake up time.
They know, and they are going to red pill us all. They call themselves the foragers. And this is the story of a small Florida college professor of folklore who is going to bring the truth to the masses, whether it kills her or not.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And love it.
Matt, it's where did you...
The funniest blurb I ever read. Right. Literally, I remember reading this blurb when it was going around. I'm like, this is hilarious.
Yeah, we jumped on it pretty fast. We're like, oh, this is great. Matt, where did you get this? Like, were you just looking out the window?
Fever
like,
dream.
Squirrels, right? Yeah.
I had a bad run-in with a squirrel once, Rob. Yeah, this is my therapy. This is how I'm getting back at it. Closure. Let's call it closure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. Totally get
it. I love it. I love it. So great.
I mean, honestly, the idea, this was really one more where I had a couple of characters that came to me first. One was the main protagonist here is Norma Sweeney, who is a Harvard-trained folklore professor who's stuck at a fictional, small, podunk, kind of redneck Florida college called Umatilla University. And her and one of her students, who is a baseball player who's just basically trying to get a passing grade until he can declare himself and try to go professional. They have to team up for strange reasons that basically come down to Tyler Spano, the name of the baseball player. He has to get a passing grade in her class or else he fails out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And both are just you do very well with your characters, and they always come off unique and I don't want to like say singular, because you can kind of relate to all of your characters, but they certainly are their own people, which is great.
Thank you.
But I got to ask, how do you achieve that?
So I think that's a great question. I think the key to characters, I mean, you can, first of all, is staying curious about people, like what makes people tick? What is it that that bugs them? What is it that they really want in life? I think the other thing too, though, is to try to have a little bit of fun with everybody that you deal with, whether that's a villain, whether that's a protagonist, whether that's a secondary or tertiary character that's kind of strolling across the stage. Everybody's got something interesting about them. Can you think of something, imagine something that's interesting about this one person, and then just amp it up, turn it up to 11. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with Norma Sweeney, you know, she's on a certain level, she's kind of a wreck. I mean, she can't interact with human beings the way people should be able to, and certainly the way a teacher should be able to. But she's also got a backstory. She's got a reason why she's like that, and she's got hopes and dreams. And I think that's, if you can do that, and that will keep you from writing tropes or writing, you know, just kind of flat stock characters. And honestly, just pay attention to people around you. I mean, you don't have to carbon copy the people in your lives. In fact, I would strongly suggest to any authors that are listening, you don't do that, because that's a great way of alienating people.
Right.
But what you can do is, if somebody you know has kind of just a unique little quirk or an interesting hobby or something, you can take that and then pull something else from somebody else and then just kind of mash it all together, and you get an interesting person to write about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. People watching is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
great. Yeah.
So tell me about something that you find difficult in writing or in marketing.
Right. Yeah. Well, we all know that one.
Let me do the latter one, because that's that Mount Everest. That's the hard hill to climb. Yeah. Marketing is a challenge, I think, for a lot of folks. I mean, I used to be a practicing attorney, and I'll tell you, when I was a lawyer, marketing was the hardest part of the job there was. I mean, not dealing with clients, not going in front of juries, any of that was easy. the marketing part was the biggest challenge. And it's, in a way, it's kind of the same problem there as it is here, which is that there's a huge swath of people out there that like to read books and that like to read different kinds of books. How do you get in touch with those people that would be interested in your kind of book? That's the biggest challenge. I think if anybody had figured out sort of a surefire way to do that, they'd have sold it by now. There's a lot of people that are trying to sell it. I don't know how much that's worth, but I'm still a work in progress. I'm still figuring that out. I think the best you can do is just you just try a whole bunch of different things. You throw a whole bunch of lines in the water and hopefully you get some nibbles on some of them. That's, to me, that's how marketing works.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Totally.
No, that's actually really good advice. I didn't realize it when I first got involved in the publishing world. I thought, I'm the talent and then they take care of it. But if you're working with small presses or indie presses, or of course, if you're an indie yourself, that becomes a second job for you if you're going to get any traction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you've brought home a couple of awards and you know how that works. And that's part of it too. Like that's effort that you have to put in to find awards that are open and that fit your genre and that, you meet the criteria and then get it over and pay the fees. And it's a whole other job.
Yep.
It definitely is. It's a lot of hours and it's a whole nother job where there's no training manual and very few mentors that can really show you, because what works for one person might not work for another.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure it can even be taught, to other authors, but, it is like a whole nother job.
Yeah. We could probably do a whole podcast on how to market your books, but, I think some of those core elements is just, you got to get it out there. You got to get in front of people as much as you can. And, I think it's what's important to realize is it's like any other industry, right? Any other entertainment industry. There are some fantastic singers out there and they have nice, tidy, little small followings. But to really hit it big, you just got to be lucky. You got to be in the right place at the right time with the right thing. And you, Matt, you're a fantastic author. I love your work. You deserve a Netflix series. And,
I will take that, Rob.
Right. We'll keep our fingers crossed. But you deserved it years ago. And it's so hard. it's so hard.
So if anybody out there is listening from Netflix, wide open,
they
ready
do.
To talk.
They do. they're always listening to our
Call
show.
Call me, email me, whatever. Yeah.
I always put Easter eggs in my current book for the last book I wrote. So somebody will be reading the last book I wrote, or they'll be watching an anime version of this series. That's just my way of dreaming. Just
nice.
I make it happen in my own universe.
That is awesome. No, that's a great idea. Yeah. Manifest it. Make it real.
Exactly right.
Matt, do you have any Easter eggs you want to tell us about that you dropped into your books?
Ooh.
So, it's funny that when Jen said that, it made me think of one actually in The Mountain. There's a scene where there is, it follows about three or four main characters, a big, thick doorstop of a book. But one of the main characters is a guy who's he's a judge who he's interacting with a very domineering matriarch, his mom. And she's trying to steer him on a certain path that he's not really wanting to go. And she demands of him that he write a book. And he explains to her, Mother, I wrote a book. I wrote one already, but nobody ever read it. And her immediate response is, well, then write another one that people will read. And that was kind of a joke to myself, which is keep writing and hopefully somebody will read it.
That's awesome, though, that's very meta. That's awesome, though. Yeah. And that's always the advice that we like to give out is, you wrote a book. Now go write another one.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're marketing this one and then you're publishing that one, then write another one and keep those going. Yeah. That's hard work. It's hard work to be an author.
It is.
Yeah. Matt, do you think your first book was easier to write, or have subsequent books been easier to write?
So my first book, the first one that came out from a publisher, The Mountain, was almost a 250,000 words. I would, to your listeners who are writing or aspiring writers, I would not recommend doing that as your first book. Definitely. If you've got a big meta, I want to tackle, you know, all of the mysteries of the universe in, you know, in 800 pages, put that aside. Write something fun, light, airy, droll. Do that first, because it will grind you down. That process of trying for the big magnum opus, I think those are called. Don't do that first. Do that later. My process is still changing in terms of writing. I was a kind of a light touch plotter. Then I became a total pantser. Yonder and Far was a total pantsing. Mm-hmm, I mean, just, mm-hmm. You know, basically I had a character, I had a first chapter, I kind of had an ending, and away I went.
Nice.
And the second one that's in the queue, the follow-up to The Lost Lock, which can I reveal a title? Is that okay here?
Nope, we got to hold on to that one.
Got to hold on to it. Okay, I won't.
Because that
won't
could
say
change.
Anything.
The second
Yonder and Far.
There you go.
Was also mostly a kind of fly by the seat of the pants. Although a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to plot out a little bit more in my writing, because I'm a big believer in efficiency, and the thing about pants writing, you know, the people that they call, I think the technical term is discovery writing. If you are
What?
There's a technical term. I know this is.
There's a new term. Come on, yeah. Yeah. I've been doing this for 30 years.
We've been pantsing for years.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, rude, Matt, to give us an actual technical term.
So what is it called? Discovery writing.
Discovery writing. Yeah.
So what's the technical term for plotters?
They're just plotters.
Oh, yeah, okay, that doesn't change.
Boring.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, is that what I'm saying? That's
that,
the idea.
Plotters, yeah. This episode of Myth Behaving is brought to you by the Bath Bomb Diva, producing fine, handcrafted bath bombs and shower steamers. Scents ranging from fruits to floral to musks to weird French names, the Diva offers a wide selection for maximum olfactory goodness. Bath bombs are offered with and without prizes inside and made using water-soluble dyes for no messy residue. In honor of our second year with the Diva Lab is sending me a super secret new product to try. Because of how all these great products make me smell, in a good way, I can't wait to try this one out and report back. You can try all the Diva's creations at www.bathbombdiva.com. And thanks again to Bath Bomb Diva for sponsoring the show.
No. But I'm finding that the discovery writing process is not the most efficient way to use, you know, I mean, I think we're all doing this as a second job. This isn't our primary thing. So we only have so much bandwidth, so much time to devote to it. If I'm having to erase entire characters, which I actually had to do in the first Yonder and Far book. If you're having to, like, you know, rewrite huge swaths in order to make things fit together, gosh, maybe wouldn't it be better to front end that work in an outline? I don't know. I'm still figuring that out myself. I'm still working through my process and tinkering with it and see if I can't make it better. Mm-hmm. But what about you all? I mean, do you all change over time? I know both of you write a lot.
Yeah,
so.
I was a 100% plotter or a pantser, and now I'm like kind of plotting, but only because some of my reviews would be like, "Where's her plot? She lost her plot." I'm like, "Ah, fine, I'll just plot a little more. Make me plot." So I'm more of a character writer, I guess, than a story writer, I guess, because there's, like, you know, character driven story and then story driven. So my stories are more character driven. The characters drive the story, which sometimes I guess you can lose the plot. So I just make sure I know where the middle is. I know what the climax is and I know what the end is. And that's my half plotting. That's what I do.
All right.
How about you, Rob?
Well, you know, I am totally a discovery writer.
you're gonna wear that.
I've known that term for years, of course. No, I I've always been Discovery. I kind of knew, like you, Matt. I knew the characters. I knew the beginning. I knew the end. I just needed to get, you know, point A to point B, and however many points that went through between. So I've always kind of been like that. Even in college, I took a creative writing class, and they're like, "All right, we're going to learn how to plot. We're going to outline." And I hated it so much because I don't like to write like that. And then
yeah, I don't like outlines either. I lose interest.
And when I sat down to So I wrote this horrible fantasy book years and years ago when I was a kid, and but always kind of kept the characters in the back of my mind. And I decided to rewrite it about 15 years ago. And I got two buddies. I'm like, I need your help. And I just want you to help push me through this. And I didn't even know the term beta reader at that time, but they were my first beta readers. Yeah.
Nice.
And look at that.
And one of them's like, I need the outline for this so I can make certain that you're going where you want to go. And I'm like, okay, great. I'll write an outline. So I wrote an outline, and immediately the next chapter totally destroyed the outline.
Like, chapter two, and you went off the rails.
Chapter two, and I'm off the rails. Yeah, exactly. Nice. And I said, guys, I appreciate that you wanted an outline. It's not going to happen. Like, so I'm I've always been a pantser. But my style has grown over time, and in a lot of ways, I wish I could have the very first book back. I don't know if you all feel this way, but I'd love to have the first book.
Definitely. Yeah, okay.
I think maybe all authors, but I think all pantsers would love to have that first book back, because we pick up so many tools along the editing process, the publishing process, the writing the next book process, that I don't know how you get around that, though, because you got to go through those motions. So
yeah, no, I mean, it's what makes a good story makes a good story, and however you get it down on mm-hmm. the computer on paper doesn't really matter, as long as, you know, at the end of the day, it's the same product that you're aiming for. Yeah. It just drives me, I mean, Rob, you probably feel the same way too. It just drives me nuts when I'm, you know, I'm going a long ways and I feel like I'm getting some steam, and then you realize I'm not going to get this story past this point unless I fundamentally change something mm-hmm. that I've already done previously. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, I guess you either do that while you're writing or you do that while you're outlining, but either way, you got to get it done.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Now I keep a file that for every book that I've ever written, I keep a file that I call extra stuff. And that stuff that
yep.
I'm like, do you do this? Great. That was my question. Yep. Like, am I the only one who does this? Because every now and then I'm like, hey, do you do this? And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. And I end up
no,
with
literally minor,
another book, right?
Yeah, no, literally mine are called outtakes.
Outtakes.
Just outtakes from this book. And I drop them all in there. And in theory, I'll go back to them and mm-hmm. maybe utilize them. So, you know, file mm-hmm. off the serial numbers or something yep. and use it for something else. In practice, I don't think I've ever looked at them again.
Oh, whoops.
But I keep them, you know,
good.
Kind of like a hoarder.
Yeah, I think you should. Because it represents hours and hours of work. And, you know, that's effort. And at
right.
some point, like you said, theoretically, I've actually gone back a few times and I'm like, oh, that scene that I wrote 12 years ago, that's the scene that goes right here. Who knew?
Ooh, right on.
So nice. It doesn't happen often, but enough that, and I just can't get rid of it. Like, you know. I did research once on some ancient currency and the exchange rate and all that, and just wrote out like almost a whole chapter. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Nobody wants to read this crap. Like,
are you kidding? Rob, sign me up.
You're in.
Oh yeah. I was an econ major and I like historical fantasy. Send that to me. I will read that in an instant.
Oh my God. And then they did the currency transfer. It's amazing.
I'm hooked.
Oh, I love it.
Sell one copy. So totally worth it.
Yeah, totally worth it. So now that we got the pantser versus plotter thing out of the way, because everybody has to ask that question. Yeah. Tell us something that you like about the writing process.
Probably for me, the creative process. You know, it's kind of like if you do long distance running, you can get in this zone where the dopamine's really hitting. And the endorphins are all flowing and just sort of everything just sort of flows. Every now and then, doesn't happen often, but every now and then you can get into a rhythm a scene where it's just you're channeling. Mm-hmm. It's just coming from the muse or whatever, and it's coming down on the paper. And that's what, for me, that's what keeps me coming back to the computer and keeps me coming back writing, even when I hit the roadblocks, even when I hit to the scenes that I know gotta get cut or gotta get changed. Mm-hmm. Those moments of kind of serendipitous writing, they're awesome. So I had one, I was working on a short story not too long ago, and you know, the ending came to me and it just started flowing, and I actually started getting a little teary eyed, which is ridiculous. I mean, this is like my own
no,
thing.
No, it's not. It's perfect.
But it was one of those things where like the kind of emotional oomph to it had enough that there was actually, I was getting an emotional reaction to it. And when you can get in that zone, and again, it does not happen very often, but when you can get in that zone, it does make you want to keep coming back for more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, where do you think you get your confidence to write?
Well, I have editors who don't ridicule me or tarnish my manuscripts and burn them. So that helps a lot. Having supportive editors. I think it's one of those things. I was very fortunate in my upbringing. Both my parents revered the written word. My mom actually wrote a book that I kind of, it's on Emily Dickinson's poetry. And I understand maybe half of it, but it's that kind of at a, you know, a much higher level. And my dad wrote a lot as well. So for me, it was something that just, it was what we did. We talked about writing a lot. We talked about reading a lot. So it just kind of feels natural. Does that make sense?
Oh, no. Absolutely. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. That's fantastic. You have all that support. I don't want to put my parents down at all, but I remember my mom once asked me, like, what do you want to be? And I'm like, oh, I want to be a playwright. And she's like, well, you better grow a
You'll
thick skin. Yeah. She just, like, she was being really real with me. And I just, like,
right, right.
I'm like,
mom.
Oh. And obviously, my mom. Jeez. My mom actually wrote too, but yeah, like it was like, okay.
She said it out of love, Rob.
Right? Yeah. No, she did. She did. Yeah. I love my mom. My mom is wonderful, and she writes, and she's But yeah, so I know what you mean by that's just what we did. We wrote. Like my dad wrote a little and stuff. So, Jen, what about you? I just turn the mic over to you for real quick.
Sure. I got a good question for you. So I recently learned that I have this thing called antaphasia, which means that I cannot picture things in my head. When I close my eyes and try to imagine an apple or a horse or a house, I see absolutely nothing. Blackness.
Really?
Yes. So when you close your eyes, can you picture things into your head? And do you use that in your writing?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the whole not picturing.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Crazy.
No.
What? So if you were called into court to testify and they were to ask you to describe what the witness looked like, you know, what somebody looked like, or you wouldn't be able to recall it, or is it
correct,
you can recall things you've seen, but you can't summon things that you haven't seen?
Correct. Yes. I can't see anything in my head if I try to visualize anything, but it's hard. It's really hard to explain, because if you tell me to picture a horse in my head, I will close my eyes and think of the words horse, and that will conjure up in my imagination, which I cannot see, because I know what a horse looks like.
Right.
So here's a cool thing. I've never had a dream about any of my characters because I don't know actually what they look like. I only kind of what they look like because I describe them with words. But I usually use an actress, like one of my characters looks like Ming-Na Wen from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Agent May, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
okay. So you drop like a substitute in to kind of place. Okay. That's neat.
Yes.
She won't see that person.
I won't see them. I can't
but
see them in my head.
She describes them from like the word memory version. So like if I say apple, you could like picture a nice red juicy apple, but Jen would just see the word apple and she
see the word. I just know I see black,
like,
and nothing.
Right. Like, yeah. You and nothing. I, Matt, we're like at a loss when it comes to
it's like
what
2%
Jen
of
does.
The population that has this thing.
And we just
learned about it last year.
Yeah, we just found this out. Yeah.
That is fascinating. And what's really neat, Jen, is that you're writing. I mean that you are just totally blazing through that. I mean, that's really cool.
If you read my writing, you'll see that I describe things more than other writers do.
I was just going
to
ask,
especially my earlier stuff, because no one told me I don't have to explain that much, because I write more like a screenplay, so that you can see it in your, you can see my shit in your head very well, because I describe the shit. But I've toned that down to let the reader, because it bogs down your writing when you describe shit too much.
Right.
And that was one of my earlier things, was that I was doing that. And now that I learned that I have this, I think it's going to change my whole, I mean, I've written a ton of books already, so now I'm just going to be writing completely different in the future now that I know I have this.
That's really neat, and I can totally see why you would just go overboard on the description, because it's like you've got to lay all this out for the folks that are reading it.
Right, because I can say to you dilapidated house, and you could probably think of 12 different looking dilapidated houses. So I'm like, and the shutters
were Adam's green family, and I just that just broke, what right,
exactly and the
house.
Shutters were green and broken off, and the stairs were chipped, and the handle was wrought iron but rusted, you know. Nobody needs all that, Jen.
Well, but we do. We need
some of it, not all of it.
But the fact like, that I you go to that level is different from like how I go to. I'm like, house, whatever. Because I, in my perspective, everybody knows what that looks like, right?
And you give them like a few things here and there. But I was like, I literally spent an entire paragraph describing what the guy was wearing. He was wearing all black, and I literally described black belt, black shoes, black laces, black. I'm like, what is wrong with you? And no one told me it was bad.
Well, you didn't. It wasn't bad, but I just didn't know. It's great. We did a whole conversation. Jen and I did a whole conversation about this. So
that's really interesting. I mean, I will tell you. I don't know how this is for you, Rob, but for my characters, even the main characters, I always have kind of a. I never have a distinct image of what exactly they look like. In fact, a lot of times they have kind of blurry faces, but I have an idea of what they ought to look like. And then, you kind of work with the words, and the words kind of read back a certain way. And it just kind of gradually everything kind of falls into place. But I mean, to this day, I don't think I could tell you exactly what John Yonder or Captain Farr exactly look like in my head. But I've got an idea.
But if one was to walk up and knock on the door, would you be like, oh my God,
it's you.
Would you know that?
I think they'd have to hand me their card.
Yeah.
Unless they were dressed the right way. And then maybe the outfit would trigger it to be like,
and then
that's you.
Then you'd be like, okay, you're a crazy fan.
And I need to call the police.
How fast can I get to the phone? Right. Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness. I love this. Matt, it's been so great having you on. We've got time for one more question. Jen, would you like to have the honors today? Doing the last question?
Sure.
Okay.
This is a question that Rob and I like, because we believe that it's very important that everyone do self-care.
Okay.
So what is one thing that you do to keep yourself in a mentally good spot so that you can keep writing?
Well, besides the importance of hanging out with family, doing good stuff with your loved ones, I'd say the other, I've really only got two hobbies, writing. And then the other thing I do that just kind of blows off steam, I play the bagpipes.
Oh my God.
You didn't lead with that?
I need video. I need to hear this.
Most people
this.
Don't, but you know.
My gosh.
I am a little bit Scottish. I went to Scotland. It was beautiful there. I want to go back, but yes, I love bagpipes. It's either you love them or you hate them. I love them.
That's exactly right.
Scottish myself. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but
that's what I say. With the name Rob Roy, it kind of has
and
to
Mick,
be, right?
Yeah.
Just
a little bit.
Wow, Matt! This is why we do this. We get the most interesting things. Yeah, that's fantastic. So, Matt, we've loved having you on. Where can people find you, and where do they find your books?
Best place to find my books is on Amazon. Anywhere books are sold online, Yonder and Far and Look With Your Eyes are both with Elysian Press, and available now. You can find me online. I don't do much on Facebook, but I do keep a kind of a writing journal, blog, a little bit about, you know, movies I watch, a little bit of everything on MatthewCLucas.com.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Awesome.
Excellent. Well, Jen, we've done another Myth Behaving. How are you doing?
We are back. After our winter break, we are back.
Yeah, it was a little longer than we wanted, but we are back. And so those of you who stick with us, we so appreciate it. And please push us out to others. Jen, you have any final words for our listeners?
Everybody have a great week and stay safe out there.
Definitely stay safe. Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you next time.